Doesn't that computer know who you
are? Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is me.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact scenario.
I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my
onto
friend?
A Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be
what?
No problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk.
All right.
Yes. Tech Talk. Saturday morning. Here we are again.
January
2nd, 2010. The first show of 2010.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
A brand new year.
Michael Tech Talk, Caster over there. Dave Sparky Saganaki over here. I'm so happy to be here. I am.
I can
I'm
tell.
Thrilled.
This actually is this is close to marking the fourth year, I think, of because let's see, we're at
well, episode, now you're depressing me, man.
Episode 175 or so is coming up,
yeah.
And if you figure 50 episodes a year,
yeah,
minus a few for vacations,
yeah,
you know,
so
that's
maybe
three.
Maybe,
and yeah. I know it was winter time sometimes, so
I know. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you were here when I got here. I got here early. 05.
Yeah. I was here. The doors of the station opened like in
September,
and I was here December, January of that.
Was
that
it 04 or 05?
I've
lost track of the years.
I think it was 05. It was 05. Okay. But I'm you know,
and then
you get to my age and it just slips
and then
away.
You and I started together. I invaded your space, and it was,
and thank
it was,
goodness.
thanks.
Well, you know, it's on the website. I don't keep those shows pre-Dave shows. Oh, those are nowhere to be found, and there's good reason for that.
But I remember it was the end of the winter of 06 that I was.
Yeah. I think that's right. That's right. I spent a lot of time with Stan.
Yeah.
And those guys, Stan and Die, his morning show before then, and that was when I was working right in the area, so I was able to come in, and the show was on Wednesday mornings at that
7 time. 8 a.m.
Yeah. Brutally early.
Yeah.
My wife didn't mind that though, because it didn't take up any of her time. She, as long as I didn't, you know, muscle her out of the way when I was trying to get out of bed, she was fine. So
well, welcome to the show, everybody.
Happy New Year.
Happy
if you
New Year.
If you hadn't heard, it is the new year.
I'm still fuzzy on the concept myself.
Oh,
new
man.
Decade?
It is. Well, you know, for not for our friends in China, though. The Chinese New Year is not for another couple of months or so. I work with a lot of people from China, so I was just talking with some of them about that and how that's different. That's kind of cool, though. They're in America, but you get to celebrate both ends of it. What they were telling me is
party
it's great.
Twice a year, yeah.
There you go, yeah.
Have you ever gone to a Chinese restaurant around... It doesn't even have to be on the date. Anywhere around Chinese New Year, it's wonderful. You know, the hospitality and the sense of fun is really really nice.
And they really put out the decorations and all the other good stuff. I mean, you know, we have a couple of noisemakers and things like that, but they go all out. That's more of a big deal. I guess it makes sense. It's a bigger deal than Christmas, but of course the percentage of Christians in China is probably pretty small, I would assume.
I really don't know what the demographics are there, but I've got to tell you, for myself personally, this is probably one of the best, or maybe even the best New Year I've ever had.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Well,
really had a good time.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
that's really nice to hear.
Well, until I got here, that is.
Yay. Oh, listen to
thank
that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
That's a great thing here. You know, and you always hear that however you ring in the New Year is kind of how the... You know, what the mode and the mood that you're in is how things are going
to
go.
That's a very Buddhist thing. Yeah. They call it consistency from beginning to end.
I was unconscious. I was asleep. I don't know how that... I fell asleep in front of the TV. But, you know, I was in bed.
Just an old married guy.
That's right. In bed with the love of my life.
There
so
you go.
I guess, you know, there's some good sides to that, too. Of course, at the end of the year, there's always tons and tons and tons of all the best ofs and the predictions and all the other stuff.
Whatever.
And last week, we actually did a couple of predictions. It's kind of funny, is already within a week, I'm seeing signs that the predictions that we made last week are starting to come true.
Uh-huh.
So I could right away.
So maybe they weren't. You weren't as farsighted as you thought you were. You know, like, instead of a year, you were maybe a week.
We're talking a week. It just you know, the calendar had to flip over, and that was all that it took. Already.
Well, the word got out. You know, people don't realize how influential this show is on the information technology industry.
Yeah, I think what happens, you know, the big guys, the MSNBC, CNN, the other ones. They don't want to admit it, but really, where they're going to for their insight and information is right here. So don't forget, you heard it first. When you hear it coming up on CNN, as we did just yesterday, what did CNN come out with? But a whole article about how digital piracy is going to hit the ebook industry. And if you recall, last week, that's exactly what we said, is that was going to happen in the new year.
Somebody stole your scoop.
And then
they probably actually have facts and figures to back it up.
Well, facts and anybody can come up with facts and figures. Come on. You don't need that.
Well, then why didn't you?
Well, I didn't need them. See, it worked out anyway.
Oh, okay.
The other one that I saw too was
you didn't exactly intuitively you were way ahead. But the facts and figures would have slowed down your conclusion.
Exactly. Yeah. I was able to produce a greater quantity by letting the quality slip, and I think that's what's important here.
Well, that could be our mantra, our motto.
Quality over quantity over quality. That's the way it works.
Slipping quality.
Slipping quality allows us to produce more quantity. In fact, we've had questions about moving into extra hours here on Tech Talk, and I don't think that's a good idea. But we another one that came up was LCD TV market is going to grow and boom in 2010. That's on DailyTech.com. That also just came out yesterday. So I think, and we had said that, at least I had said that, I thought that plasmas were going to be dead and that LCD was just going to completely take over the market. I think that's going to happen.
Cool.
So your
predictions are coming true faster than you ever dreamed.
We're making it. We're making it there. Yep.
Hey, speaking of, one of the other things we were talking about was the Apple tablet.
Yes.
Yeah. There are rumors. And a guy, apparently a blogger, who's a former Google president, Google C president, Kai-Fu Lee, says that that Apple has ordered 10 million tablets.
Oh, 10 million.
Which is a lot.
Yeah.
Well, it's a rumor. Who knows? But
I heard in January they're coming out with it.
But considering it's a new market that people are going to have to kind of adapt to, that might be a little... if you compare it to the iPhone sales, the initial iPhone sales, what in the third quarter of 2007, how many iPhones do you think were sold?
In the first quarter of 2007?
The third quarter.
I don't know, maybe probably a couple hundred thousand.
Exactly, 270,000. But the fourth quarter of 2007?
I have no
1.1 million basically.
Wow.
And then the first quarter of 2008, 2.3 million. And the second quarter of 2008 went 1.7.
But they're thinking 10 million.
Yeah. So that total in that first year is 5.4 million iPhones. And now that's a phone. It was a more commonplace market. So if in fact they are ordering 10 million, it seems like maybe the research bears this out, that there's going to be that big of an explosive need for this thing.
Yeah, you know, one of the predictions I wish that I had made and I saw from someone else, and I completely 100% agree with it.
You can steal it. You don't have to give them credit.
I'm not going to say who it's from. But
these other folks didn't give you credit.
You know, that's a darn good point right there. No one's giving me credit.
I'm kidding. We really... push attribution here.
We try.
We really want to give people credit for what they've done.
As well as my failing memory will allow me to. I did see, I think it was on TechCrunch or one of the others, maybe CrunchGear, that this new year is going to bring about the death of the netbook, that the netbook just isn't going to be a viable prospect
anymore. Are you kidding? It's so big. It was so big last year.
It really is, but you know, and the article brought up some really good points and things that I was
probably. I bet you it's the arguments we've made on this program that if you're, by the time you get a netbook where it's usable, you might as well go for a low-end ultra portable or portable.
That's exactly what's happening. Yeah, the restrictions that are placed on you when you purchase a netbook have been so strict and restrictive that people are looking to buy these cheaper laptops instead.
Right.
And I went through the same thing at my day job. We really needed a
the job you may do, the day job you may do
that I may continue to do as long as they don't listen to the program. We were looking at purchasing a whole host of netbooks in order to do this conference situation and let people work on them. Got in a couple to demo them out, and everybody's like, wow, these are really cool. These are great. I love these. I'd love one for home, but no, I can't use it here. You know, yeah. And it's like, well, when you bring it home, who are you going to give it to at home? Well, you know, I guess maybe my teenage son, you know, because they're so cheap. But they're so restricted, the screen size, you know, and all that.
The processor, graphics subsystem.
Yeah.
Usually the hard drives are a lot smaller. But I think they performed a great service. I think they drove down the cost of
the smaller
laptops. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, you're absolutely right. Right. But once these tablets come out, what I can see happening with that is, especially if you figure a way to maybe have a slide-out keyboard, something along those lines. I can see these pushing away the netbooks.
Yeah.
and also getting into a lot of the lower end laptop category. Now the one thing that I would love to see,
it depends on the price point, though.
Mr. Jobs, if you're listening, this is the one thing.
What do you
I
mean
would,
if?
Mr. Jobs.
Wave to him. He's probably watching the webcast.
Yeah, and maybe Microsoft needs to come out on this. I don't know. Not that they're big on hardware. But what I think would be the killer setup for these that would allow them to sweep the market, not only for the netbooks, but eat into the laptop mode, but then also to grab a big chunk of the whole ebook reader segment.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Is you need to have... especially if you could do it with a hardware switch on the side, an easy switch between loading up full laptop capabilities versus loading up ebook, and have the ebook boot be the way that a Kindle is, which is bang, instant on, and you're ready to read. If you do that,
it's a good point.
You know,
it's an excellent point.
Yeah, because when you're sitting on the plane,
but they won't be able to do just that. it'll be not just ebook. What about the multimedia stuff? You'd want, you know, an MP3 player or something like that along with that.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, like the Kindle. Now, the Kindle is an MP3 player also. It'll play MP3s. It'll do it won't do great with graphics, but it's got that, you know, that paper look to it.
Yeah.
And it's an instant on for books and for newspaper, and gets you onto your 3G network for all that good stuff.
Yeah.
And I think if you had that, you know, and Windows 7 has come out, and the boot time's faster and all that good stuff. And that's great. It's much, much faster.
I'm liking Windows 7 a lot.
I'm loving it as well. I think that was one of the best things that came out of 2009 out of Microsoft was finally coming up with a decent OS.
Yeah. I'm still figuring it out. I have no idea where everything is, but
Well, you got to pick up a book by our good friend Mike Miller.
Oh, definitely.
You know, he's got some good stuff.
You want me to actually read?
and that's my apology for the week. My apology for the week here, by the way.
You're apologizing for me?
No. It has to do with books. Wait a second. I think I've got some music for the apology of the week.
Our new feature.
I don't know where
another reason to apologize if you don't have the music.
Yeah, I probably that is a good another one. I don't think I have the music. I don't think this is actually what I wanted.
So that's our second apology of the week.
Yeah, that's not what I wanted to play.
Okay. What about Brenda Lee's I'm Sorry?
Oh, that'd be good. Here's my apology of the week. There's a couple of people that had won books, and I kept promising I would hand them out
you
to them
swore
before
to,
Christmas.
About a month ago, you swore.
I just found the boxes underneath some wrapping paper. I thought they'd gone out. I am so sorry. I thought they had gone out.
You have to send out two books now.
We're clearing up. I'm going to send more than two books. I got to open the boxes up again. But we're sending them out. I thought they went out. I thought they were at the post office and gone. And I'd even sent an email saying, hey, I hope to our friend Dan out in Salt Lake City.
Hope you enjoyed the book.
Yeah.
That you never sent?
I never heard back from him. And I'm like, that dirty rat.
He's probably on medication right now. What book? I've been waiting for the book. I've been going out to the mailbox every day. I've been looking up and down the road for the UPS guy.
I don't know. You know, so they're coming out. But that's my apology of the week for this week. I will not be making that same apology next week. I promise that.
Okay.
Man. And we've got Jay going to be coming on here soon. Yeah. We actually do have a fair amount of interesting stuff that came up, too, with news. With the top 10 lists and all that are always fun to look through. One that was really good was the world's top 10 spammers for the last year. That was great. And I've actually seen, you know, some of the stuff that these guys have put out, which I think everybody has. You know, the Canadian pharmacy. Which actually is not in Canada. It's in Russia, Ukraine. Herbal King is another one. That's a good one.
Those guys. Oh, man. They got me. They got me. I'm not sure how, but I had to shut down a debit card because of them. They were, you know, they started.
They link through these images that you get in your email, and even sometimes looking at the emails and downloading those images and clicking through to things can cause you some problems.
Well, I think it was like late at night vodka, you know, shipping. Oh, just pay for shipping. Okay.
Yeah. I can
sure,
use
what's
some
the
free
problem?
Vodka. Why not?
No, I'm drinking, but you shouldn't drink and surf the internet.
Oh, no, that's
with
true.
A credit card nearby. It's not a good idea.
That's true. Yeah, that is a good point. Yeah. And actually, funnily enough, one of the people that got just slammed recently with their Facebook page got hacked and used as a vector for spam and all that was the FCC chairman. His Facebook account got shut down because he was sending spam out to all of his friends, and Facebook keeps an eye on that kind of thing and actually will proactively take action against it and will shut him down. So
I'm just thinking about all the different people's reactions, you know, like the Facebook people, what happened?
Yeah.
The FCC guy, what happened in the spammer? Got the wrong guy.
Well, I couldn't think of a nicer guy for it to happen to, really.
Oh, no, I don't know that much about it, but the little bit I have heard about the new FCC chairman is he's a wonderful guy. And he's supposed to really love low-power FM stations.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, he's just a wonderful human being.
Well, fantastic then.
And he would never bother us, as far as I know. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. That's good. You know, we're behind him.
We definitely are.
That was my other prediction.
Probably one of the best persons in the world.
That low-power FM was going to take over the airwaves this year. So that was the other prediction I forgot. You know, I guess. Oh, you know what I should do too before I give Jay a call is make sure that we've actually got his correct number. It may wind up being a rather shortened call with Jay. He's out and about and in the world.
Mobile. But I don't see how he does this when he's moving around with his cell phone.
He's got a BlackBerry. He's got a smartphone.
I understand that. I understand that part of it. But to do the quality of his interviews is so high. And for him to do it while he's on the go is just amazing.
And driving around. Yeah, that is true. That is true. And to just a very organized mind, I think. He's just he's got it all in his head. He's got it all set and ready to go. And, the access to trivia is just and knowledge is just fantastic.
He's a geek's geek.
Yeah. Oh, I see he's got his own Google Voice number now. You can always find out what Jay's doing by going to jaygarman.net. And I was going to ask him, in fact, about his nerd word of the year. Let's see if we can get him on. Why not just
bring him? I've heard there's a lot of interest in last week's question, the Sherlock Holmes question.
Yeah. In fact, I wanted to guess at it to see if I
which
know the
novel,
answer.
Which novel did Sherlock first say?
Hello?
Elementary Mentor Watson.
Good morning, Mr. Garman.
Jay!
How you doing, fellas?
Welcome to the show.
Good. We're glad you could join us. I told people we've got you on sell. We've got you roaming even. You're still willing to let us bug you even as you're out and about doing errands and things.
I'm a known multitasker, you know, and you guys are worth at least 25% of my attention.
I appreciate that. You know, 25% is probably about all we can handle.
You've been talking to my wife.
If you applied more than that to us, I think we might cause problems. So if we hear the cash register going and somebody asking you if you want the extended warranty with that, we'll know we need to put you on hold for a minute.
you know you need to talk me down from stupid. Is what you start agreeing to an extended warranty.
Yeah, we've had a few shows on the folly of the extended warranty here as well. not big fans of that. It's something like Circuit City in its last years was making something like 3/4 of its profit off of the extended warranty margin. So
yeah, at that point, I'm pretty sure you could have investigated them as a criminal enterprise. I mean, that's basically just shakedown money.
Yeah, yeah.
The nice DVD player you got there would be a shame if something happened to it.
Absolutely. I actually had plans at one point. I was going to put out a line of T-shirts and hats that said, no, I don't need no stinking warranty, just so you could just point at it when you were in these stores. They're so aggressive about it that it seems...
It's not just warranties. I think I told you when I bought my laptop that it was... they tried to sell me Microsoft Office, all kinds of virus protection, and just anything you could, a case.
All the
they came up with about 8 things, and the look of disapproval I got with each no got more severe.
So. Well, the margin on the hardware now is so slim that they're really not making a whole lot. My favorite story, I got a really quick anecdote about the extended warranty, and I may have shared this on air before, I don't know, but my brother-in-law, great guy, he was in one of these, I think it was Best Buy, as a matter of fact. He was there, and they were he was buying a computer. He had it up at the desk. He was ready to go, and the guy is just powering this extended warranty. And he's like, "Well, sir, you know the RAM goes bad on these, and then what are you gonna do? And you know if the hard drive fails, what are you gonna do? You know that's gonna cost you more in repairs to this. I mean, I tell you, a lot of these they'll have a problem with the monitor." And my brother-in-law, after about 5 or 10 minutes of this, of him constantly having to say, he's like, "You know, if the machine's that fragile, I don't think I want it. Just go ahead and put it back."
Yeah. Well, now that Jay's listened to us talk.
Yeah. We're so happy to have you on the show, Jay.
I'm glad I could be here to enable your anecdotes. I have my own extended warranty one. My favorite, very quickly, is I was with someone who was buying some noise-canceling headphones for $12. And the extended warranty was $15 on the noise-canceling headphones. He's like, "I could replace them for... than the warranty you're pricing me."
Exactly.
Yeah, I love that.
Why not just buy two, put the other one in storage.
There you go. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, Jay, we brought you on because there has been some interest and excitement about this week's trivia question, which was in what novel from Arthur Conan Doyle in the original canon did Sherlock Holmes speak the words, "Elementary, my dear Watson"? And I wanted to take a stab at this one myself because I'm a bit of a Holmes maven, and so my guess on it, and correct me if I'm wrong, my guess on it was that it wasn't actually ever spoken in any of the Conan Doyle works, that it wasn't until Holmes came to the screen that I don't know if it would have been Brooks or Rathbone, but one of them came out with that statement at some point when they hit the screen. That's my guess, anyways. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, or fill in the additional detail here.
You are correct. In the 60-odd Conan Doyle Sherlock Holmes short stories and novels, the phrase "Elementary, my dear Watson" never appears. The closest he comes is in The Crooked Man, where Holmes is showing off and being able to tell that Watson has been riding in Hansom cabs as opposed to walking. Mm-hmm. And in the same scene, he says, "My dear Watson and elementary," and that's as close as he ever comes. He never actually puts them together into the common phrase. As to where it was first originated, because Holmes said "elementary" a lot, and he said "my dear Watson" a lot in canon, and in derivative works, catches appeared as well, but never together, as far as anyone can tell. The first known and documented case of this is in the 1929 film The Return of Sherlock Holmes, which starred Clive Brook, which is also the first Sherlock Holmes movie that had sound. And the last scene is Brooke portraying Holmes saying, "Elementary, my dear Watson, elementary." That's sort of Holmes' send-off. Now, the problem with saying that's the first time the phrase ever occurred is the review in the New York Times of the film noted that Holmes used his signature catchphrase, "Elementary, my dear Watson, elementary," implying everyone knew he said this before he ever was known to have said it. So either that was an assumed or assigned sort of catchphrase even before there's the first recorded incidents of it, or we just lost all records of when it happened.
Yep.
The latter is more likely because there were Holmes stage productions and radio plays, and anyone who's ever talked to people that do those sort of things, the more you do them, the more you stray from script. So it probably got popularized before it was set on film, but that's sort of the canonical, this is where it came from, 1925, The Return of Sherlock Holmes.
Excellent. I didn't realize, so Brooks was the first in a sound version of Holmes on the screen. I know, of course, the most famous Holmesian actor is Rathbone, but he was in plays before that. Was it Brooks or was it Rathbone that was the first actually on the screen? I just don't recall.
And it would have to be Brooks. It would have. Well,
I think Clyde Brooks, is the first that was on screen. But don't quote me on that, because they also, then you get into this funny thing. Well, there were stage plays that were filmed that without sound. And so what do you count those as Sherlock Holmes films? Because they never released in a conventional sense. I mean, I think that the actor William Gillette, who was a very long-running and well-known Holmes portrayer in London, I think some of his stuff was filmed, and I think he also performed on the radio, but I don't know. I mean, they broadcast some of his plays on radio, but it wasn't, like, produced as a radio play or produced as a film. They just set a camera or a microphone in front of the stage. So I don't know, but that's more like journalism to me than producing a film or producing a radio play.
Yep. I guess that, it was with anything. You wind up with these kind of gray, these gray areas. Christopher Lee played Holmes later, and Charlton Heston, and who else has played Holmes? Hey, there's so many people who played Holmes.
Charlton Heston? I had no idea.
Yeah.
Basil Rathbone actually hated the role.
Oh, really?
He didn't like it. Well, he was Shakespearean actor.
Yes.
So for him, it was a bit.
Kind of beneath him.
Well, he played it a lot. I think there were like 30 movies or something they did.
Isn't the same thing true too about the deer hunter hat and the
deerstalker hat and the Inverness cape? Those were never described. Now, unless let's say never described. He never got specific. He was described as wearing a cape. It may or may not have been an Inverness cape. He was described separately as having a hat with ear flaps. It may or may not have been a deerstalker hat. He was never that specific.
Yep. Yeah.
So the image of him and the Inverness cape and the deerstalker hat and a magnifying glass, all of that was sort of just conjured up from the non-canonical sort of thing. So, I mean, that's sort of, I think, the beauty of the Holmes character is that he's sort of just collectively owned by all these people that have invested in him. And there's an argument been made, even by Holmes historians, that sort of the best portrayal of Holmes going on right now is on the TV show House, which is a blatant Sherlock Holmes allegory, because it's instead of Holmes and Watson, it's House and Wilson. He lives in apartment 221B. He has a drug problem. He plays a musical instrument. Sort of this whole, they're consciously and intentionally evoking Sherlock Holmes as that character, and Holmes fans enjoy that.
I didn't pick up on the 221B. That didn't even. Oh man, I've seen House's door so many times, and I never made the connection. That you're absolutely right. That's that is very cool. There's been kind of a resurgence in Holmes on TV in general, even prior to the Morton Downey Jr. All this business with the new movie. Sanctuary, a sci-fi show, had Watson actually come back as a several hundred-year-old gentleman in some of the episodes and things like that. And it turns out, of course, that Watson was the brains behind.
Well, and there's been a tremendous influence of Holmes or Doyle in everything, mystery novels, all of detective and police shows. That's all, Holmes was the original super perceptive human being that could solve these crimes. And now that's a character in virtually every police program or detective program.
Yeah, the profiler
the profiler, the closer, the mentalist. All these people have these special perceptive abilities, and Holmes was the original prototype or archetype for that.
Yeah. Yep. And skeptic. What should we be thinking about for next week for trivia for us?
Well, since it is now 2010, I can't resist doing a 2010, the year we made contact, trivia question. A lot of folks don't know that the original movie 2001 was based on a short story, not a novel, by Sir Arthur C. Clarke. It was a short story called The Sentinel. Basically, Stanley Kubrick came to Clarke and said, I want to make a movie, and I want you to help me. And so they picked a short story and turned it into a novel just for the movie. So when he started writing sequels to 2001, it was with the intention that it never be made into movies. In fact, he joked to Kubrick that your job is to make sure no one ever makes these sequels into movies. So, of course, someone made 2010 into a movie. And despite the fact that Clarke and Kubrick sort of agreed to never do it, they did agree to help, and both played parts in the film. They're just very subtle cameos you might not notice. So what role did Arthur C. Clarke and Stanley Kubrick play in 2010, the year we made contact?
Ah, excellent. I have no clue on this one. I have no idea. So what role did Arthur C. Clarke and Kubrick play as cameos in the 2010?
Another great question. That's a wonderful question.
Yeah, that is fantastic. I don't know if I'll be able to keep myself from looking that one up. I might, I might have to break down and see if I can figure it out.
If you want to look it up, just go get the DVD. Treat yourself to the DVD. It's not a great movie, but I enjoy it. And just listen to the commentaries. I'm pretty sure it's on there. That's a great fun way to do research for this kind of thing.
Yeah. You know, actually, that would be a good thing to do. Because, yeah, I remember seeing the movie several years ago and being kind of lukewarm about it. But going back and watching it with the commentary would probably not be a bad way to go.
Yeah.
So, and actually, speaking of older movies, I wanted to bring up since we're doing the new year thing is your nerd word of the year is great, is the reboot. And there is just so many reboots and things like that going on. People can find it at jgarman.net, but do you want to give like the two sentence definition of reboot for us?
Well, reboot is different than a remake in that it sort of restarts a story or a franchise's continuity by completely ignoring everything that came before at its whim. So it's familiar, but it's not the same. Battlestar Galactica, the new one, is sort of the classic example, although 2009, I think the best reboot we saw was Star Trek. I mean, that is the quintessential reboot because they didn't stop the storyline. They just went back to an earlier part and diverged, which is, I mean, it comes from soap operas and comic books. They do this all the time. But I think this year we saw a whole lot of that, especially with science fiction, and I think that we're a little bit better for it, but I'm really hoping in 2010 we get more original ideas.
Yeah, that would be nice, wouldn't it? We have kind of this last year in particular, it seems, rebooted and rehashed a lot of older stuff, and I'm not sure why that is. I don't know if it's some fascination with our past
I think youth, in the case of Star Trek, it really freshened it up. It really freshened
Absolutely.
It. Yeah. You know, it reinvigorated some of the emotional elements of the story, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
well,
I'm not.
I think the other part of it is, and the upcoming A-Team remake, I think, is sort of like the classic example of this, in that there's a generation that grew up on this stuff, so there's a built-in audience, so there's a less risk.
Ah.
But it's old enough that you have liberties to take it. So, I mean, the fact that Liam Neeson is going to be playing Hannibal in A-Team, and Bradley Cooper is going to be Face, and some ultimate fighter named Rampage Jackson is going to be B.A., I think is odd to me, and almost, you know, a little bit sacrilegious, but I'll probably see it at some point, just because I watched enough A-Team as a kid. I got to see what they're doing with it now.
Yeah.
And also, it's about regular cycles of creativity, I think. I think we have like decades or sometimes even a century where there's a lots of original art, and then there's periods of derivative art. And that's kind of where we are in creativity right now, is there's been a lot of derivative art going on. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true. And it may just be that we don't realize how much derivative art there's always been.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the original Star Trek was built as Wagon Train in space, and Wagon Train wasn't exactly a classic. Yeah. I mean, like a few years old.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. Yeah. A lot of our space stories really are rooted in westerns and rooted in or mythology, you know, mythological patterns of storytelling. So yeah, there's not a lot that's new under the sun, I guess, or under any sun, whether ours or another. Well, Jay, I'll let you go. I'll let you get back to your daily grind there. Thank you so much for joining us. And again, I'll mention to people they can find more about Jay and cool stuff like the Nerd Word of the Year at jgarman.net, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, take it easy, fellas. Have a good one.
Jay, thanks so
all
much
right,
for being
care.
With us again.
Thanks, Jay.
Thanks. Happy New Year, Jay.
Yeah.
You too.
Thanks. And as always, just fantastic to hear from Jay.
It's been a great year of spots with Jay, of segments with Jay. He just does I'm an amazing guy. Just an amazing guy.
Yeah, I don't know what compels him to continue spending the time with us, but
we try not to be too astounded every week, but we try to rein that in.
It's true. Evie Ken says thanks to Jay. So bye, Jay, and
thanks to Jay.
And we will be back in just a moment. We're gonna play a couple of spots and breaks and good stuff like that. But you're listening to Tech Talk on WRLR, and we'll be back with some more cool stuff in just a minute or two.
WRLR 98.3 FM.
Park Automotive Repair, the oldest auto repair facility in Lake Villa, believes that if you treat customers fairly, they'll keep coming back. Park Automotive Repair provides a complete range of auto maintenance and repair services. Brakes, mufflers, tune-ups, engine rebuilding, front-end work, transmission and differential repair. Local shuttle service provided. Located at the corner of Grand and Fairfield in Lake Villa, across from Caboose Park. Their number is 847-356-2925. That's 847-356-2925.
The Lake County Journals cover what matters most to you. Local news, sports, weather, and entertainment are in print each week and updated often online at lakecountyjournals.com. You can look to both to find out more about your community and your neighbors. At lakecountyjournals.com, there are interactive videos and photo galleries, or even a place to post your comment about a story. Lake County Journals and lakecountyjournals.com, your life connected.
Sunday night, radio night, music night. Sunday nights at 7 p.m., dial in 98.3 WRLR for Radio Relics, the radio program that embraces the cultural icons of past, present, and future. Hear bluegrass, newgrass, folk, funk, reggae, jam bands, peanut stands, blues, and boundless sounds from the ends of the universe. Sunday nights, 7 to 9 p.m. with me, Ben Richards, your host for this musical journey, Radio Relics, on 98.3 WRLR.
The Marcus Gurney Cinema in the Gurney Mills Shopping Mall, 6144 Grand Avenue in Gurney. For movie showtimes and advance tickets, their website is www.marcustheaters.com, or the phone number is 847-855-9940. The Marcus Gurney Cinema can host your private party, has 20 movie screens, and accommodations for the disabled. Marcus Gurney Cinema creates magical movie memories.
Oh,
I love that.
Caught Dave by surprise. That's
no, you didn't.
Calabria.
I knew we were on the air sooner or later. I would have jumped in at some point.
Yeah, I didn't even have my headphones on, so it's all right. We are back. It's Tech Talk on WRLR. You're listening to us right now.
More of us to enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. It just doesn't end, does it? You know, it's the start of a new year. All sorts of great stuff going on. Oh, hey, you know, one thing that happened, this is a little bit off topic for tech, but there was a lot of talk this year.
Uh-oh, folks, be prepared. If he says it's a little off topic, it's... It's out in the field somewhere.
It's close. It's close. Yeah, okay. There was a lot of talk this year. My son was real excited. He heard about the fact that this was a blue moon this New Year's.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've heard that myself. Yeah,
So it was pretty exciting. And we did go and see the nice blue full moon. But, of course,
it wasn't
blue
actually
moon
blue,
doesn't
was
mean
it?
It's not actually blue. Oh. Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was...
Did you just learn that, Mike?
No. I had known this before, but I thought it was interesting. I hadn't heard the whole story about blue moon before.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting, that it was actually just been a mistake in Sky and Telescope back in the 40s. An amateur astronomer wrote it as blue moon. Blue moon had been used for years before that as an unusual or unlikely occurrence.
Yeah.
And he applied it specifically, though, yeah, because he misunderstood something to the second full moon in a single month, when in reality it was supposed to apply to the third moon out of four in a season, which a season typically only has three full moons. So I thought that was interesting. Another interesting thing about full moons too is that, you know, we never actually have a completely 100% full moon. Because the full moon comes to us, the light from the moon, of course, is reflected from the sun.
Yes.
So the only way that we could ever get a full face reflected
was to get rid of the Earth. And then we couldn't see it because we wouldn't be here.
Yeah, or if the moon is directly in between, if the Earth is directly in between the sun and the moon, in which case it's an eclipse. So we never truly have a full moon. But we get pretty darn close.
Yeah.
Pretty darn close.
That's a nice, you know, symbolic, romantic application of the new, for the new year. The lunar cycles and this new year and decade.
Yeah. This is the year of the blue moon.
Cool.
And we hadn't seen one of those since 1990.
Well, that involves technology in a way. I mean, we wouldn't know all of that without technology.
That is true. Yeah. I Googled it. So, there's some really good sites too. I'll wind up shooting people too. Maybe as part of the cool sites this year. I'm sorry, this week, of things that people used for their top tens and all that. There's just so many of them out there. It's tough to keep all of them out and straight and all that other good stuff. Where am I at here?
I don't know. Over here.
One of the things I think that that was real interesting that's happening here in the new year is we've got all these new browsers that are coming up.
Ah.
And one of the ones that's really taking over now is Google's Chrome.
I got to tell you, I was really shockingly surprised at the way this thing worked. It's a pretty cool browser.
It is. It's slick. Yeah. It's fast.
Yeah.
You know, and it's starting...
resource light.
Yeah. And I like the fact that one of the main differences between Chrome versus Firefox or Internet Explorer, now all of them use tabs, but the difference with Chrome is that Chrome actually, when you open a new tab, puts that into its own memory space and kind of reserves its program and application area so that if there's a problem in that tab, it doesn't bring the whole browser down. It just kills the one tab.
There you go.
Whereas with Firefox, and I have this happen to me all the time lately since I upgraded to the newest version of Firefox and I'm on Windows 7, if I'm running Flash applications in a couple of different tabs, it'll lock it up and it'll just shut it down.
Well, we're getting spoiled and that kind of thing. You know, years ago, you know, we would never, you know, we've all gotten to be, instances of Internet Explorer or Firefox junkies. It's like, how many 10? 15 windows? Sure, why not? Why is this thing running so slow? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's something interesting too that's come up quite a bit lately is people saying, hey, my machine's running so slow, my access to the internet is so, lame
sluggish.
What can I do to improve that? You know, do I need a bigger hard drive? I don't know why, but people say, I need a bigger hard drive. No, a bigger hard drive's not going to help you. You really have to look at how you're using your computer and what things are going to speed it up. One of the first things people always turn to after the hard drive idea is, well, I know I need more RAM then. Mm, yeah. And that can help.
Oh, sure.
But it not always. always. It really depends. RAM will help you specifically if you're running multiple applications at the same time. If you've got Internet Explorer open and you've got five tabs open and you've got Microsoft Word going and in the background then you're also doing Skype with somebody and all this, yeah, RAM is probably going to help you because it'll make it so that you can keep all of those things open at the same time. But it's still not going to help you if you're running Skype, a BitTorrent client, you know, watching something off of Clicker.com and you know, doing a YouTube thing, because your bandwidth is going to be all clogged.
It's only so much.
Yeah, there's only
pipes are only so big.
Exactly. So, yeah. So when you're looking to improve the
if
speed,
four people are taking a shower in the house, nobody's getting that wet.
That's right. You know, there was an interesting discussion about that too, and how they were going to be possibly trying to do community Wi-Fi. You know, there's a couple of options. We're very, very used to the typical type of Wi-Fi operation that we have available in most places right now, which is you go in, you sign up. If there happens to be 40 people signed up at the same time, you know, it's too bad. It's like everybody trying to walk in the door at the same time, there's only so much area to get in with that. And so your bandwidth then is going to be whatever happens to be left over from, you know, spread out fairly evenly as the system can do over the 30 people that are trying to get in. But there's another philosophy of Wi-Fi and bandwidth allocation, which says, you know what, we're going to allow and allocate, you know, 15 people, period. You got 15 doors to walk in, and we can guarantee that those 15 people are all going to get this amount of bandwidth. But if you're number 16 trying to get in at that time, well, tough luck. You get a message that says, you know, there's no opening for you. And some of the communities and areas out that are trying to supply Wi-Fi to the communities are starting to look at that as an option, because the need for the higher speeds of bandwidth is so vital that it really doesn't help anybody to give them all, you know, 50K of access. Mm. You know, you really need a minimum of a meg and a half or so of access to be able to do video, to be able to do Skype, to be able, you know, some of these things like that.
Whatever happened, there were a lot of towns doing fiber optic a while back. Is that still going on? And everybody seemed thrilled with that.
Yeah, well, Philadelphia, interestingly, just is possibly going to get now that's not going to be fiber optics. It's going to be citywide Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
The plan is to use it initially for two aspects. One is going to be for community workers, so people doing gas
field,
checks,
field work. Yeah.
But also to attach Wi-Fi broadcasters to some of those units, so you don't actually have to send anybody out. It just comes.
Yeah.
And then the second area of the community is for the underprivileged and the the areas that don't have either the resources or the infrastructure in order to have broadband into the homes, because it's really seen as a need now to be part of the community, to be part of what's going on, and to be able to take advantage of the resources that are available to you, even as someone who's at poverty level or below, that you need to have internet access in order to make the most of what's there. So I think those things are going to come through. I think it's going to be interesting to see how well that works. Like I said, that was one of the predictions. That's one of the things that weighed into my prediction last week, when I said that I believe that one of these providers is going to be getting government assistance at some point to supplement or implement better bandwidth and better internet access.
Yeah, I don't know. As much as I love the internet and everything, I'm not sure that that's really a need, or it's quite as much leverage for people to become better educated or better citizens than it's being sold as.
Well,
you know what I mean? I mean, are kids that go on the internet that much smarter than kids that go to the library? I mean,
well, I think that's your I think that's where it's probably going to come down, and there's some decisions that need to be made. Is that, yeah, you can have people going to the library, and certainly the library physical structure, it's there and all that, but that takes money. That takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of resources to build that. It takes space in your community, and it requires that people actually are able to go there, and that they're motivated to go there, and all that. Now, if you've got
the other thing is that a lot of libraries have incredibly good websites.
Yes.
Where you can get lots of information that you can't get
Yeah.
In the paper books.
And you can now download ebooks and things from the libraries and also to music too. People don't realize a lot of the online libraries do that. But when you have a computer in your home, and I think especially for underprivileged children and for their families themselves, it makes a difference for them. Number one, for the kids, I know we're talking about just with the kids themselves, being able to do research online and do things like use cloud computing now to do their word processing and have access to the same computer skill sets that more privileged children would have. But also, too, if you look at the parents, being able to assist their children in learning, but also to find a job. You know, it's a lot easier to find a job now going to monster.com, going to dice.com, going to some of these other locations
and places online
than it is through the
newspaper. It's faster. It's a lot faster.
Yeah.
Yeah. More timely.
And expand your reach. And you can get online training and things like that.
So this is the digital democratization they're talking about? Is that if Wi-Fi is available to communities en masse that that could even out some of the inequities that
I think it starts to help level things out. Yeah, I think it does. One of the things that and we're getting off in a political discussion here, but I think one of the things that tends to be forgotten sometimes, though, is that, you know, there's always going to be a divide, no matter how level you make the playing field. Human capabilities and human nature and human interest is just different. Some people are going to be driven and want to have a high-powered job making a bazillion dollars.
We're talking about equal access.
Exactly.
We're talking about equal access so that everybody, somebody in a lower income area, they've got 25-year-old textbooks. And of course, in a more well-to-do area, they've got one-year-old textbooks. This, with the digital aspect, theoretically, you could provide everybody with the latest information.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that we need to do that. I think that's a base need for people, is that access to education, access to information.
Well, of course you'd think you do that. It's going to be great for your business.
Yeah.
There's going to be all these great jobs. Mike, I'll be up there administering the regional Wi-Fi
for the
northern half of Illinois from like Springfield up.
You'll
be a czar. You'll be an IT czar.
It's not about that. It's for the children.
No, the tone in your voice is not convincing at all. Nah, more money for Mike. A Ferrari for Mike.
I wish I had a finger in that pie, but no, that's not.
No, you're not watching that at all. You're not drooling at all at these. All that work that could create.
That's another point, though. As this stuff becomes more prevalent, we're moving our working structure, many people talk about the rise of the information worker, and how can you be profitable or at least, even hold a sustaining income if your skill set is manual labor? And there's only so many manual labor, sustaining jobs throughout the country, especially in the metropolitan areas. Mm-hmm. There's so many of them, and then they're gone, and then, you go. But with the advent of the computer and with the information age and so on, if I gain a skill set, even if it's something like, programming COBOL, great. All right, well, there's nowhere for me to program COBOL in Chicago, but hey, guess what? There's a company in Colorado that needs exactly what I can do, and I can do it remotely. I can do it from my home because even though I live in a Southside apartment that doesn't have much in the way of any other anything, it's got Fios because the government put Fios in for me and is supplying me with a high-speed internet action, and now I have the resources that I can move my standards up and I can maybe get my family out, or I can at least provide for them the way that I want to.
Speaking of the internet and Wi-Fi and all that, it must be time for...
Oh, my gosh!
The cool sights of the week.
You're right.
Well, I'm glad you had that queued up.
Oh, yes.
Sit back, relax. Listen to the cool websites of the week.
And we got some good ones, too. We got some good ones.
You always do, Mike.
This is awesome. Now, I'm going to start off with, if you got a couple of days off here and you're looking for a project to do, a fun little project to do, this is so cool. This is, you can add on, there's a little application and program. It's called Network Lights. And what Network Lights does is it uses your keyboard, you know, the little LED lights on your keyboard and stuff, to indicate outgoing and incoming network packets on the network interface.
Oh.
And so it's just fun. It makes everything flashy and all that cool stuff.
Oh, man.
So,
man, that's geeky, Mike.
I know. I love it. And it's free. You can even look at the source code. The source code is cool.
That's so 1995.
Hey, you know, I like it. But this is a great site in general.
What were they, the TX and the RX lights on the modem?
Exactly.
So that's what you miss that.
Yeah.
You're nostalgic for those lights.
I do. Yeah. I do. You know, actually that would be another, I'll write this myself. You know what I think we need?
What?
I think we need, you need to get a wave sample or an MP3 sample of the modem connect sound. You know, that.
Oh man. I used to hate that. Yeah.
And then
you do a really good one, by the way. That was, you're missing the high pitched one.
I used to freak people, non computer people out, is that when we would hear that, I would listen closely and I say, okay, he's saying hello. The server just responded. They're like, oh, there's the ACK code. I pretend like I could actually understand and break it. It was a dumb thing to do, but it was fun. I just, you know, people believing that always
sounded like a drunken cat in heat or something.
Really? Yeah, it wasn't the best. But I, you know, I'm thinking maybe I'll write myself a little application that anytime you go and start connecting to a Wi-Fi connection for the first time, it'll play that sound. So you'll know that you're connecting to Wi-Fi. You know, like, because you go into a Starbucks, if you've already signed into the Starbucks thing, or like McDonald's now is offering free Wi-Fi, they're going to start blasting this out throughout all of their McDonald's, free Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
But, you know, you need to know. You walk in, you got your laptop on, maybe you don't want to be connected to Wi-Fi. Hey, you have that little sound plays, and you know, oh my gosh, I'm connected. I don't know.
Good point.
That's my idea. But anyways,
I got, well, it's some sort of indicator, not necessarily the most annoying noise on earth.
Well, you have the little pop that comes on the bottom. So Network Lights is at itsamples.com. And itsamples.com is just a fantastic website to go to. Anyways, they've got a ton of useful freeware utilities. It all comes with the source code, too.
Yeah. Oh, very
so
cool.
If you're interested in doing some app programming on your own, look at what they did and see how to hook into the hardware and use that in applications that you want to do. It's a lot of fun for people that are interested in programming. So that's really cool. Another one here. Now this is completely off of the tech thing and on to something completely different. Is what to wear for runners? Runner's World. It's cold out there right now. It's frigidly cold.
This is really
cold.
Good information, because I've just found out. I was oblivious to the advances that have been made in fabrics and textiles. To make you warmer. You don't have to freeze as much as you did in the old days. These are great materials.
Yeah, I just went actually to Under Armour and got myself a nice thermal underlayer shirt for running in the temperatures like this. We've got Jesse J Street is a big time runner as well. He's got his show on here, and he'll tell
that's
you
why he's so mellow all the time. Jesse's one of the mellowest human beings on the planet. He's just like very, very calm.
He really is. Yeah. Then he plays his music selections, and you're like, what? He must get it all out. He's got some great tunes on there. If you haven't heard his show, you'll want to listen to that. But if you go to runnersworld.com, and there's a whole flip link thing through there, a CDA, blah, blah, blah. But if you go through there, you'll find they have an awesome little application that you put in what the temperature is, what kind of the wind is, if it's sunny or rainy and all this, and how you like to feel when you run. You know, do you like to feel cool? Do you like to feel warm and all that? And then it'll tell you exactly what you should be wearing down to the gloves, hat, sunglasses or not, all that good
stuff.
So that's very, very cool.
There's so many options, you could get lost looking for this stuff. So this helps to have the recommendations.
And if you're a relatively new runner or you're moving into a new area of town. I know Jay's freaking out. We're getting close to time. But hey, you know, we got all sorts of time today.
No, we don't.
There's nobody here breathing down my neck.
Oh.
You know? So
I miss that breathing very much.
I know. So I got two more cool sites and then we'll flip it off. We got one. This is great. I thought this was such an awesome site. I shared it with everybody that I knew. Gizmodo has a fantastic website link that is it's called Don't Get Screwed, a guide to deals on cables and extras for your gadget gifts, which is perfect timing right now after everything. Do you really need to pay $110 for a 12-foot HDMI cable?
Right.
Yeah, you know, the answer is no. But what you can do is
there's all kinds of overpriced stuff out there.
Absolutely. And there's stuff that you're just not going to need that you're going to get all excited and anxious about and think, oh, I just got my new iPod. I need that dock. Okay, now the last website that I'm going to give you, so that's at gizmodo.com. Last cool site of the week I'm going to give you here is it's at Smashing Magazine, I think is what it's called. It is, oh yeah, smashingmagazine.com. Just go /tags/wallpapers. I love this site for new wallpapers. Every single month you go there, there are some phenomenal artists that have created these really cool looking desktop wallpapers with calendars built into them. So I grab like 5 or 6 of them, throw them into Windows 7. It does the slideshow thing and flips them around every couple of
I'm
minutes.
Really glad you said that, because I've seen those things on other people's computers and have been very jealous. And it was too embarrassed to admit I didn't know where to get them. So thanks. That's really good information.
That's where you go. Smashingmagazine.com. And we gotta go.
We're going now.
My cool site, a cool song, a podcast-only song of the week this week is going to be Academia by Sia. Sia? S-I-A. I don't know how you pronounce it.
We're going to say Sia right now?
Like we're going to say Sia right now. Have a great week. Stay tuned, though. There's lots of other great stuff coming on, and we'll be back at you next week.
See you then.
Have a good one.
You can be my alphabet and I will be your calculator, and together we'll work out on the escalator. I will time you as you run up to down, and you'll measure my footsteps as I blush through this town. The mean of our heights is divided by the nights, which is times by the daggers and the root of all our fights. The pass of your poem just dissuade me in your knowing, and the beauty of the word is that you don't have to show it. Oh, I could that I am all that you've got. I'm a binary code that you cracked long ago, but to you I'm just a novel that you wish you never wrote. I'm greater than X and lesser than Y, so why is it that I still can't catch your eye? You're a cryptic crossword, a song I've never heard. While I sit here drawing circles, I'm afraid of being hurt. Oh, or will you add another page on? It appears to me the graph has come and stolen all the laughs. It appears to me the pen is overanalyzed again. And if I am a number, I'm infinity plus one. And if you are 5 words, you are a friend.